This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Off the Record with Chicago Lang is brought to you by RF Bank and Trust and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So glad you could join us. If you want to give us a call today, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259, 325-4259. You can text us on 4224796. That's 4224796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. That's 4393043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. I have a really provocative scenario that I want to discuss with you, ask you about today. So this is an imaginative exercise we're going to do today. As it now stands, we have 39 members in the House of Assembly, right? 39 members in the House of Assembly. All right. They are all elected by the people of the country during the course of an election, the most recent one of which was in 2021, right? And in that parliament we have now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 members are Free National Movement members, and the other 32 are PLP members. Okay. Now, of that PLP 32, of that the 32, we have approximately, we have what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Well, let's put it like this. Of that, in the House Assembly, at least, 14 of them are members of Parliament. I mean, our cabinet ministers, right? We've had cabinets of up to 21. I think it's more than that. I think it's almost 17 or 18 of those members who are cabinet ministers, right? Who are cabinet ministers. Then one is the Speaker of the House of Assembly. One is the Deputy Speaker of the House of Assembly. Right. So you have a number of them who are cabinet, who are ministers with portfolio, a number who are ministers of state, and then you have a number who are parliamentary secretaries, right? So a fair number of the members of parliament on the Progressive Liberal Party side are in the cabinet of the Bahamas, are part of the executive, the government. That's not unusual. Sir Lyndon, Hubert Ingraham, Perry Christie, Hubert Minnis, all had such scenarios where a great proportion, certainly a greater proportion than not, of the members of parliament sat in the House of Assembly, in the cabinet, or if they didn't sit in the cabinet, they held some significant post as chairman of some quasi-government entity or something, right? So largely, they get tied up by the executive so that the backbench makes up a very small proportion of the sitting members of parliament. So in successive cabinet parliaments of the Bahamas, the backbench, saving and except for the opposition members of parliament, the backbench is very small. Very small. And that creates a scenario in which the government is left basically with only the opposition, which in many of our parliaments so far, many, not all, but many of our parliaments so far have been very small. So you have oppositions of 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. And those small oppositions are the ones who are left to hold the government's feet to the fire. There's seldom any real independence, people might say, a resident in the backbench, because there is typically a very small backbench. Now, that doesn't mean that a small backbench can't be effective in holding the government's feet to the fire, because I remember when Whitney Bastian was in the House of Assembly, Whitney Bastian was a one-man band. Whatever you thought about Whitney Bastian as an independent member of parliament, he was an effective member of parliament insofar as holding the government's feet to the fire. And I watched him on many occasions. So it's possible to be effective even as a one-man band. But, you know, obviously, if you have more backbenchers, and if you have more backbenchers with the capacity to act independent of the executive, now that is not a common thing in the Bahamas, this parliamentary democracy. It's not in the United Kingdom. That's how you could get like a prime minister getting changed every couple of months, right? You got backbenchers who, like, they end up huge numbers compared to the executive. And if you get on hand, they could put a vote against you and boom, you are out, right? But if you look at our current situation, we have 23 cabinet ministers. 23 cabinet ministers, and two of them are in the Senate. And if my numbers are correct, the balance of whom are in the House of Assembly. Okay? So, if you have a big backbench, let me ask you, if you have a sizable backbench relative to the government, what do you think would be the difference in the Parliament of the Bahamas? If you have a sizable and relatively independent backbench, what do you think would be true of your House of Assembly? What do you think would be true? Somebody text me, call me, tell me. Imagine a situation in which you have, say, 12 cabinet ministers, 12, not 22, 12 cabinet ministers, and the balance of a side, let's say the side is 32, 20 of the members of the House of Assembly on the government side are backbenchers, let's say 20 backbenchers, and they do not work for any government entity. Tell me what you think would be the scenario in the House of Assembly. Call me, text me. 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text me on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. If you don't understand what I'm asking, let me know. But tell me what you think would be the case. All of a sudden, you wake up tomorrow. The size of the cabinet is 12. The number of PLP backbenchers is 20. So that's their full 32. And then you have the opposition, 7. The opposition is 7, I think. Right? What do you think would happen? What kind of situation would you have in the House of Assembly? Call me. Text me. Or you don't have any thoughts about it. I know you all have some thoughts about it because you all are the people who cry about these Gussie May cabinets, who cry about the fact that the executive essentially consumes the parliament and that doesn't permit for the genuine separation between the executive and the legislature. Even Halson Moultrie as a speaker, he really raved about this. He really complained about this fact of the incestuous relationship between the executive and the parliament because so many cabinet ministers get appointed. Now, that's not against the law. The Constitution allows for that to happen, and so it's not against the law. But what it does create is a circumstance in which, other than the opposition, and if their numbers are really small, you have really nobody to check the government. Right? Not in any real sense, because the government is is the members of parliament. So if you woke up tomorrow, Prime Minister Davis had a reduced cabinet at only 12 members, and all the balance of his members on the PLP side were backbenchers, and then the opposition, because think about that now, that's 20 backbenchers and 7 opposition, that's 27. If half them vote one way with the opposition, that things change. The government isn't going to vote against itself. Tell me what you think. I'm going to, producer, we can take a break. This is our first break. And then when we come back, we'll see what people have to say. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang Yost. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, come take my hand.
We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Marched the car. The lady run into me, marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
What risks do inflation, soaring energy prices, and global tensions pose to the Caribbean? Join international experts, local professionals, and policymakers at the 9th annual RF Economic Outlook. Be part of the conversation on March 14th by reserving your seat today at rfbeo.com. RFEO 2023 is proudly sponsored by RF Bank and Trust, Alive Doctors Hospital, Fidelity Bank, J.S. Johnson, PwC, and The Tribune.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabar Gulang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust again that you are doing well. The question is, what would happen if we had and don't let's get fixated on the fact that it's the PLP administration in office today. Let's say it could be any administration. If you woke up and there was a much smaller executive than there was a backbench in the Parliament of the Bahamas, in the House of Assembly. So you woke up and there were 12 members of the cabinet. The balance of the people in the House of Assembly were just backbenchers. They're not sitting on any board as chairman or executive chairman or anything like that. They are simply members of Parliament. What would be different? What would change about the House of Assembly, you think? This person says, hi, Z. If the 20 backbenchers were PLP, they would still not have the political will to go against their party. Is that true for only the PLP, or is that true also if it was the FNM? They would need the cabinet ministers to assist them in obtaining benefits, et cetera, for their constituents. I agree with the passage of the bills, okay? So, as I said, is this just you only saying that the PLP, or if you're saying that if it was FNM PLP, it wouldn't matter, it'd be the same thing. So you think that members of parliament will only cooperate, will cooperate with the ministers simply because they needed something done in their constituencies. Okay, all right. So either party, this text says, either party. So if that is true, if what you say is true, why does a prime minister feel compelled to put so many members in his parliament? Why would he? Because I could assure you, when the election results are closed, the likelihood that the cabinet will be really large is much more likely, because that's a way to ensure that you will keep those members with you in the vote. But you are saying, well, they're going to want to vote with you anyways because they need you to get something done in the House of Assembly. Well, if that's true, why do you need to put them in the cabinet? You think Ingram wasn't smart enough to know, I don't need to put all these people in the cabinet because they're going to vote with us anyways because if they want anything done in their constituencies. But when he had that like 23, 24... split with the PLP, almost everybody was in the cabinet. You think Pendleton wasn't smart enough to figure that out? Christy, I mean, is it really just wanting to get something done in your constituency that will keep you voting with a party? It didn't stop Travis Johnson? Didn't stop Von Miller, and he was junior member of the parliament, right? Didn't stop um, Reese Chipman, right? So I'm saying, if is it that? Right? I hear from one person so far. What are the rest of you all saying? Oh, no thoughts about the matter. Wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter at all. So that's why they were eventually ostracized. See, the problem with the scenario you paint is, if you have the opposition members of parliament who are in a minority and you do nothing in their constituency, that may not hurt you as much because they're already opposition seats. But if you do nothing in your own seats, how are you going to get reelected? Huh? Think about that, right? So you might think you're hurting your backbenchers by not doing anything in their constituency. Well, if you're not doing anything in their constituency, where are you doing anything in the country? And how is doing anything only in cabinet ministers' constituency going to help you get reelected with people who live in those constituencies and who are going to vote on the basis of things done in their constituencies? So it can't be that you just hurt them. You cannot hurt them without hurting yourself. All right? So the government isn't free to simply say, well, I got 20 backbenchers, and if you all don't vote with me, I ain't there in none of your constituency. Well, what's your budget about? Right? That'd be very difficult. Right? Anyways, so here is what I am proffering to you today. Here's what I'm proffering to you today. I think the character of the Bahamian Parliament and the representation and the executive functioning of the country would change for the better. This is what I think. This is what I was lying now. You could disagree with me, and I'm happy to hear if you disagree with me or not. Would change for the better if a few things happen. One, if we made the members of the House of Assembly a full-time job, meaning you can only do this job and you cannot have any other job and you cannot be earning an income from any other sort, save and except, you know, if your business is that you work, but you have to, you know, just like a cabinet minister, your job is a member of parliament. So you have become a full-time job. Secondly, pay them as well as you pay a cabinet minister. Pay them a salary where they can live and do what they have to do as a full-time member of parliament. Okay? And then staff them adequately with support for their efforts. Give them a real office. So they become real, full-time, genuine, well-paid, fully staffed legislators. Now, how does that change them? Well, you putting me in your cabinet isn't gonna make me get paid no more. As I'm making what you're making. So the incentive to be in the cabinet is minimized, reduced. Of course, there'll still be an interest in it as a matter of prestige, but it isn't as compelling anymore, right? Because I earn what I earn as a member of parliament. Secondly, I'm full-time now, so I don't have to part-time you. I ain't read no bill. I ain't catching up with this bill. I didn't consult my people because I didn't have time to do that because I was busy running my business. I was busy going and showing up to work. And so forth and so forth. But now I have the full-time obligation to be on your business, doing your business. That means the government can't rush nothing to me and get me to sign off on it because I have had time enough to look at it and so forth and so forth. And I'm going to be more prepared to speak my mind because you can't fire me. and you can't affect my pay, up or down. Up or down. So you get more rigor in the member of parliament because there is now for him or her a greater level of sustainable independence in the conduct of their duties as members of parliament. You agree or disagree? I have one more suggestion. I have another suggestion but we can talk about that a little later on. This text says scales would be more balanced. Agree. I'm asking you. You have one, a full-time member of parliament position. Right? Full-time member of parliament position. Secondly, you have a pay equal to that of the cabinet. Now, you don't have to make it equal, but you could make it substantial enough. So the cabinet minister could be little higher, but I think it need to be close. Don't make too much of a difference, because that ain't going to be helpful. Right? Give them a stop. An office with two or three people. You know what I mean? Somebody has to do the research. Somebody has to be able to provide for the kinds of feedback from constituents they want. Somebody has to be able to man the administrative affairs of the office so that you can tune yourself to developing, understanding, and debating bills. Moving about the country, getting to know what your constituents and what others think about these matters that are being passed. You pay a part-time person, don't get mad when you get part-time work. You pay people legally, don't be surprised if they are not maybe as incentivized. That doesn't mean pay is the only thing, but I'm saying, right? If you got a member of parliament already part-time, what's a member of parliament making the Bahamas today? $28,000 a year. Been making that from 1984. $28,000, maybe 1996, maybe. $28,000. If you inflation adjust $28,000, they making less than $22,000 a year. Right? Are you serious? And you think the fella, if I make $28,000 doing this and make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 doing that, where do you think I can spend my time and attention? Let's be real now. I have family to take care of. I have children to deal with. I got obligations that I have. If you pay me $28,000 a year and I have to spend half or more of that helping constituents and doing things in the constituency, et cetera, because many, many of these members of parliament are not independently wealthy. They're not. And even some whose disclosures reflect that they're independently wealthy ain't telling you the God honest truth, because some of those are exuberant estimations of their assets and don't reflect no cash on hand. Right? And so if you making $28,000 here that you're spending half of to do political stuff, and you could make $100,000, $300,000 across the road there, $50,000, where do you think you spend your time? Bill? What bill? Did you read the bill? No, man, I can sit right here, soak up what they say, and then I can get up and wing it. Wing it. Read what? Understand what? Stuff from the central bank? What that is? Currency what? I don't know nothing but that. Stuff from the financial services sector? Condominium Act bill? What that is? I don't know nothing but that. And don't care. Don't have no time to. I gotta go tend to my people. Right? Somebody says, G'day Lang, what you are saying that the backbenchers get the same pay as cabinet members? you are asking me a question as to whether I am saying they should, or you are saying to me, I'm saying that's what's happening, because it's not clear. I'm not clear what you're asking. This says, I'm in agreement, but let's only have about 121 constituencies. You and I are headed in the same direction. Okay? We're headed in the same direction. We do not have to have as many constituencies as we now have. But I wouldn't even be angry if you did. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be angry if you did, to have representation by people close and more intimate. That's okay. I don't have a problem with that. If the representation is good, though. If the representation is robust, I don't have a difficulty, but I don't disagree with you either on if we reduce the numbers. Okay? Says, Lang, what I'm asking is if they should get the same pay. Yes, I am saying either give them the same pay or make it really close. See, what you're trying to get, you cannot undermine your own effort. You have to create a less incentive for someone to want to be a cabinet minister on the basis of pay than being a member of parliament. Because if you create too much difference, then the incentive to become a cabinet minister will again diminish your thing. And to add to it, how about we make it against the law for a member of parliament to be an executive, to serve in or on the board of any government agency. So no more chairman of BPL, or no more chairman of water and sewage. None of that. All done away. Your job is to be a member of parliament. Go look at the laws of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. That's your full-time job. You're getting good full pay to do so. That's what you do. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Lang. Listen, I kind of agree with a lot of what you're saying. The challenge I find is that, first of all, I think it's the law of access. There are so many persons who misconstrue the value of a parliament until they get there. One of the realities I found being around parliament very, very often for many, many years now, preparation for access is better than access itself. Anybody is prepared for whatever their destiny is or whatever it is they're going after. Their value is in that. And so you are a backbencher based on the fact that you're getting to the need or whatever amount of money you're actually getting. The reality is, I think most people who end up in parliament, especially in recent years, they're taking a crash course while they're there in parliamentary democracy. They're taking a crash course whatever it is they're going after. I believe, for the most part, that my value is what I bring to the table. And I'm very frightened of what's coming to the table in recent years. And so the fact that I go micro in my approach to my constituents when it comes to, let's talk about the budget debate, for example. I agree. I've sat through many debates over the last several years. And I find it very difficult to find very few persons who show up to Parliament, and I say, wow, based on the presentation, based on the substance.
I hear you, and I understand what you're saying, but let me also say that there are experienced people who have sat in the Parliament of the Bahamas, experienced people who have sat there, not newbies, who have also not done a very good job at being a member of Parliament because they spent more time making money otherwise, because there was so little money they made from what they did. And it was not a full-time job.
I hear you. So let me ask you that, right?
Yeah.
One, should we make it possible then to increase the base for persons who are members of parliament? Just as we talk about it with the police and everybody else. I believe money makes you predictable, not accountable. That's the first thing. If you're doing something because you're getting more money as a result of it, then dog eat our lunch. The reality is,
Let's be honest now. Let's see. I like to deal in practicality, my friend. I understand what you're saying, and there are a rare group of people on planet Earth who are motivated and incentivized simply by ability to do something. The truth is, 96% of people on planet Earth ain't going to no job if they don't get paid.
No, listen, I'm not disagreeing with that. As a matter of fact, I believe in Ecclesiastes 10:19. I believe money answers all things.
Right.
I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is
we have to combine. No, what I'm saying is I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is we have to combine the pay with the full-timeness. Don't forget that. It's the full-timeness.
It's a problem, dog. My issue is this, right? Mm-hmm. That's all with full-timeness, right? Not because the seat is empty means anybody should sit in it. That's the first thing.
Say again what you were saying.
I said not because the seat is empty means anybody should sit in it.
Let's be clear now. First of all, my friend, what we mustn't do, what we can't, well, we can do it, but here's what is true. You wouldn't say anybody sat in it, but those people went to people and got voted for.
Listen, okay, listen, Chicago, based on our present political culture, and I think you say we being real, okay, they've been elected or selected, just in the seat that they're in. No one is knocking the fact that they're in the seat. I think for a very long time, we've been demanding quality from the unqualified. We've been demanding quality from persons who don't have the wherewithal to carry it out.
But let's be real though. Like, you qualify because the Constitution tell you what it takes to be qualified. It didn't say
the Constitution says you're qualified to be elected, not to carry a particular work.
That's all that's required. Is you have to first be elected.
All right. I mean, semantically, yes. Yes, my challenge. If the persons are qualified to be in the position that they're in, then I do believe that at some point we can have a real conversation about the value of the individual when it comes to salary. We have to increase the salary of the members of parliament as the salary of the police officers in our country. And I do believe that for the most part, the challenge that they're having across the board is that...
I don't know what's happening, Adrian, with your thing, but you're bubbling a lot, and you're bubbling a lot. It's getting a little difficult to hear you. But we have to take a break anyways, ladies and gentlemen, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabara Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Going on in the world today? Only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you, on the move and on the go, because business should never stop. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our webzgroup.com or visit us at any of our branches.
Carifta Tickets. The 50th Carifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now. Online at carifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets@carifta50.com or call 605-4051.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So we're trying to get in this scenario painting now, this imagination exercise, a smaller cabinet with a bigger backbench by making the member of parliament position a full-time position, paying the member of parliament a salary comparable to that of a cabinet minister, giving him or her a staff that can support their efforts as a legislator. So far, somebody said that you need to make sure they're more qualified. What does that mean in the context of a member of parliament? You see, one of the things that we have to appreciate is that the intent was that anyone, any citizen with a minimum level of constitutional qualifications, basically the basic one of which is to be a citizen, can serve. Otherwise, you end up with elitist people serving. Like, so what should be the qualification for a member of parliament? What should it be? Do you have to have a bachelor's degree, an associate's degree, a master's degree? What do you say? What does qualification mean? What does that mean? Like, seriously, beyond being a citizen, being not bankrupt, being, you know, eligible in terms of residency in the country, beyond that, like, what ought there to be in terms of qualification? All the people who are electing the member, not all can speak as well as they need to, or some people might think they should, all right? But they can speak. They went to people and got votes. People voted for them. Yeah, they might have done so on the party standard, but still, people voted for them. The power in the state voted for them. You're no more qualified than that. And what does it take to be a member of parliament? Let's demystify this for a minute now. I've been there. Let's demystify this, right? When I entered the House of Assembly, I had a bachelor's degree, an associate's degree in chemistry, biology. I had a bachelor's degree in economics, right? So that was my educational qualification. Beyond that, like, what should I have had? And to be honest with you, I know of people who would have had none of those things who would be excellent members of parliament. None of them. My mother was a straw vendor for most of her life. My mother did not go to college as I did, as she enabled me to do. But I assure you, I think my mother would have been a better member of parliament than me. I think so, right? Right? But and I know of others who could have so be. So what qualifications would you need? What should you say that a person should have that says, oh, now you could go in the House Assembly? What is it? An associate's, a bachelor's, or experience in what and what? Right? What should you have? Or should I say, oh, you have to know, I should make you do a test to know how much you know about the governmental system of the Bahamas? Should I do that? What you need to do is you want somebody who understands the role that's played by them in the House of Assembly, and the role is defined in the Constitution. You're a lawmaker. And someone who is prepared to and has the opportunity and time to dedicate and commit themselves to the study of resolutions and bills that come before the parliament, and to be able to articulate the concerns and the interests and perspectives and make suggestions and recommendations for the perfecting bills and legislation. And a sensible person can do that. Anybody can do that. All right? This does not take rocket science in the least. It doesn't take an understanding of calculus. It doesn't take you to be able to write with the effectiveness of a journalist. It does not. Okay? It is for ordinary human beings to participate in the passage of laws in their country. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Excellent. How you doing, sir?
Right here, my friend.
Oh, Mr. Lang, I have a suggestion. If I love this country, right, called the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to have people in Parliament who love this country, who's going to do what's best for the country, you know?
Can I ask you a question, please, before you go on?
Go ahead, Ms.
Prove Lang. To me you love the Bahamas.
I love the Bahamas because I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I do what is best for this country.
Oh, yeah, but how do I know that? How will I know that when you come to ask me to vote for you?
Well, listen, let me get back to my point. Okay, you know that because, listen, what I'm trying to say is, okay, let's say if a person have responsibilities in their lives, right? They can't dedicate themselves to the country as if they should have. They don't have any bills, you know. I think more mature people who don't have, like let's say, big overhead expenses, because when you join the House of the Parliament, you shouldn't join for salary. You should do it for country.
Yeah, but listen, it's okay to theorize, right? It's not a question of going someplace for the salary. But if this is a very simple question. If I make $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 doing the thing I do because I only get paid $28,000 here, where do you think I'm going to dedicate myself?
The way you get more money.
Okay, so how do you solve that problem so that you can get people dedicated to your effort?
If you want to lead this country or make a difference for this country, you can't go into Parliament or go run for Parliament if you got overhead serious bills. See, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect your decision. It's going to affect your energy. If you let's say if you got people like 60, 65 who retire, like people who've been toiling this country for years, who have been, let's say Mr. Hubert Ingram.
Right.
You think Mr. Hubert Ingram, if he makes a decision, he can make a decision for money or he can make a decision for the best of this country?
No, listen, brother, man, don't. Anyway, carry on.
We need people like that who don't need no money like that to make
let
decisions
tell,
because
let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, friend. Honestly, I'm only telling you, listen, life more practical than that, and Mr. Ingram is no fool.
I was always a fan of you. I always respected you.
I'm only telling. Okay?
So you can't tell it's all about the money.
No, that's not what I'm saying. See, because that's what you're doing. You're making it a decision between money and no money. My friend, I have a family, right? When I go to get a job, even if I love that job, it's not a question of having a buggy load of obligations. Having a family comes with a certain cost of living, period. You know this, and I know this.
Mr. Lang, I can ask you one question?
Sure.
Mr. Lang, when you apply for a job, right, mm-hmm. the people who you apply into the job say, listen, this is the salary. Now, if you accept that job, you accept the salary, correct?
I agree with you, but guess
so
what? But listen to me. I agree with you. But the member of parliament accepted a part-time job. Is that what you want?
No, I think what you say makes sense. I think their salary should be increased so they can dedicate themselves. What you say makes sense.
I'm saying
to you, like some people tell people money is money controls everything. I think a person who loves something is more powerful than money.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. But
you
I live
love
in
this
the
country.
Real,
when you
but,
want to love but, this country, you're going to do what's best for the country.
But I live in the real world, though. I live in the real world. And in the real world, even people who love things are practical. Practical. All right? Jesus loved the world, but he was a carpenter to make money. Right? Actually, I learned recently that Jesus wasn't a carpenter. Well, he may not have been a carpenter, that he was more likely a mason. Because if you look at the homes that were built in the time of Jesus, they had more brick than wood. And that it was more likely, especially given where he grew up, that he was a bricklayer or a mason than he was a carpenter. But they said carpentry sounded more romantic. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shavago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon where we are trying to reconstitute the Parliament of the Bahamas. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 4224796, or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. Our last texter, I thought, had a great point, right? I mean, obviously, you do well where you have people who love your country, right? and I would say, I mean, whatever the definition of love is, I think most of us like the country. And obviously, there are people who will serve and no matter the money. And we have seen that because whatever the pay is, have we not always had members of parliament, right? We've had people contesting for it. So obviously, people will still do that job. But just remember, it's a part-time job, right? And even with your best effort, a part-time job is not going to permit you to give it full-time work. Even no matter how much you love it, right? You say you love the person you marry, you love the person you with. You give them part-time of your time or give them a little bit of your time, even if you still love them. It's going to have an impact on how you are able to perform your responsibilities, right? And so we shouldn't therefore be surprised that maybe we don't. Or maybe we do. Maybe we get exactly what we want out of the House of Assembly, right? Maybe there's nothing really here to have to deal with at all. About $100,000 constituency allowance. What about it? That's not personal money, apparently. I mean, it's not supposed to be. It's not personal money. It's supposed to be for the constituency, which is essentially converting, you know, which is essentially allowing a member of parliament to have some say in some capital expenditure in their constituency, right? But that's not personal pay. It's at least it's not supposed to be personal pay. So could we receive your email address as well so that we can send a request from my, oh, what is that? Oh, okay. Okay, this text is lying. Most of these backbenchers get additional pay when they get a chairman post. That should be satisfying for them. But that's the point, though. If you get a chairmanship of a government corporation, doesn't that mean that the government then can determine how much you get paid? And therefore, if you had an inclination to be more independent about something that you are concerned about, you'd be less inclined to do so because you get a pay from the government. That's the whole point. That's the whole, that's what we're trying to avoid, right? I believe. I mean, that's this in this thought exercise. That's what we're trying to avoid. Usual, Mr. Lang, in the Bahamas, the public in general feel as though a good parliamentarian is a person who answers their personal cell phone whenever the community calls. Who start that foolishness, MPs or parliamentarians giving people their cell phone number to call? Say, now the Masons or New Providence will ask for more money because they will say they just like Jesus. Something wrong with you on that. This text says, says we would have a democratic parliament for the people and not a dictator prime minister like present and past. These two are dictators. So this is a person who's saying if we had a more independent backbench. This text is Shivago, if the cabinet is reduced, look for corruption to the highest level. Number one, a backbencher salary is about $35,000 a year. Their salary would drop tremendously, plus the power. No, you misunderstand altogether. No, you're not dropping a cabinet minister's salary, your salary of a member of parliament and making them full time. So nobody gets a drop in anything. So I don't know what it was that was said that made you believe that, but that is not what is being said at all. And members of parliament wish they were getting $35,000. They don't. They get $28,000 a year. That's the pay. Senators get like $16,000 or $15,000 or something like that. This text says you're also likely to get elected members based on their own merit and ideas rather than their political affiliation. Okay, this text says, Z Live, you making too much sense. I always thought about that. Can't wait for you to return. They can do that. They don't need me to return to do that, man. They can do that. This text says MP salaries equal judges. That's the suggestion. That would put them above cabinet ministers, though. that put them above. You know, this person actually has a very solid point. Think about this, right? The executive, the parliament, and the judiciary branches of government. Co-equal branches, but they don't get co-equal pay. And the parliamentarians are the only ones who get elected. Everybody has to get appointed, but they don't get equal pay. But that's a good point. Pay them what the judges get paid. Wow, sensible. This text says, I'll agree to a salary increase for MPs if there is substantial political reform, including campaign finance legislation. Yes, transparency in selection of candidates who become MPs. Okay, and light legislation on the operation of political parties. Okay, I agree with you. I think that would be that'd be appropriate reforms for the Bahamas too. This text says legislate the operation of select committees in parliament. Okay, all right. This text says I agree with you and texter. I mean, a policy or initiative like the Gladstone Road Improvement Project is impacting Carmichael, Tall Pines, Southern Shores, and Killarney. No need for all these MPs. This text says, would the responsibility and duties of the MP be as significant as those of a cabinet minister to justify a commensurate salary? I don't think so. Really? Okay, so see, this is interesting because this is really interesting. I wonder if you understand that the parliament, that the executive is accountable to the parliament. Do you understand that? I do not know many people who get paid better than the people to whom they are accountable. I don't know many people who do that. I don't know many people where that's true. Okay? And this is, it just goes to show us how lightly we take the legislative function of our country. When the cabinet seeks to do a law, where do they have to go? To the parliament. What controls your behavior and conduct throughout this country? The parliament, the laws of the land. And yet you say that what they have as significant a responsibility? Oh, wow. That's stunning. This text is, Mr. Lang, you said that just to make it sound good, but he was a Mason. Does this mean that the Bible is full of lies? did the Bible say he's a carpenter? Or was the word interpreted for Jesus, what Jesus did, carpenter, right? Or is that what happened, right? It doesn't have to do with being a lie. It could be an it could be a less accurate interpretation. And we know that over the years, there is a King James Version and there is a New King James Version. Why? Why would you have a King James Version and a New King James? Because over the years, as we learn the language better, we've gotten better interpretations of the language. And here's what is true. If a translation doesn't make a material difference to the substance of the message, that means nothing to the actual content of the message. Because if Jesus was a mason or a carpenter who said to you, love your enemies, that a mason or a carpenter said it, what difference does it make? So only people who are looking for an excuse not to believe would find something as minuscule as whether or not he was a carpenter or a mason to be a thing. Because it's only a matter of translating words, not in a matter of translating truth. That's my theology for the day. All right. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Hi, go ahead, caller. Okay, not sure what's going on there. Say, hello. Tell the caller, in Sunday school, the teacher said he is a carpenter, so the young man was a carpenter. All right. So, I mean, it's just a thought exercise that was intended to evoke something. The politicians in the Bahamas are afraid to come to you to look at the issue of their salaries. They are afraid. I am not asking nobody, I'm telling you. They are absolutely, profoundly afraid. Why? Because they know. They know that you don't take kindly to it. You think they already take teeth in money, all kinds of things. So even though a report had been created decades ago recommending increases in salary and some of what I suggested, nobody would touch it. Nobody would touch it. Nobody would touch it because they know it just ain't. They think it's political suicide. That's what they think it is. And so nobody's touched it. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, good afternoon. Shabazz, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Hey, Antoine. Somebody just asked me where you are, man. I haven't heard from you in a little while. How you be?
I'm right here, Shabazz. Holding on by the grace of God.
All right. Well, hey, if you're holding on by the grace of God, you're holding on by a lot, because you know that grace is favor, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But I was listening to your topic, and this is also something that I wrote to, and I speak to, or I've been speaking to over the years as well, over the last 2 decades, to be precise. And Shivago, we absolutely, and it's not just for the members of parliament, we need a shift in salary, and we need a shift in from part-time to full-time for members of parliament and for senators.
I didn't get to them yet, but me and you are on the same page.
Yes. Listen here, Shivago. We have had two constitutional committees, right? One formed by former Prime Minister, Right Honorable Hubert Ingraham. Another formed by former Prime Minister, Right Honorable Perry Christie, right? We have had failed referendum. However, Shabago, they have made 70 recommendations on the record, and the governments of the Bahamas have yet to pursue these legislative recommendations that are needed to upgrade the very constitution that controls the order of how our country operates, which means we are operating in a backward state, Shabago, as it relates to those 70 or more constitutional recommendation. You have supplementary parliament policies and laws that are passed that support and further give strength and meaning to the Constitution, which if we look at what is happening, or if we did an analysis over how many laws are passed in a given year or in a given term, we would recognize the absolute need to ensure that we have members of parliament and senators who work hand in hand in passing legislation in this country move from part-time to full-time to ensure that they can focus along with their staff, along with ensuring that these persons are fully equipped to carry out their jobs. Now, you had a caller before you went to the break that you were sparring with, right? What I wanted to add to what they were saying and what you were saying is this. Look, not because someone may be 65 and not have financial challenges or may be more comfortable, does it automatically mean that they are less inclined to pursue matters or means that are of self-help. Many persons, and this is on the record, not only in the Bahamas, but regionally and globally, who are self-serving, who are amongst the wealthiest in the parliament. And so that's a matter that comes down to the vetting within the political organizations to ensure that the cream of the crop in character and integrity comes to the front, and not just persons who are of means coming to the front, as you pointed out, creating a classist situation where only the haves are getting the opportunities to serve in their country at the highest and most honorable levels. And so, Shabago, can you hear me, Shabago?
I'm hearing you. I'm listening, my friend.
I wholeheartedly support, and it's one of the recommendations that I made on the Senate level, as well as on the Member of Parliament and Cabinet level to my Prime Minister and current government that I support, because it is an absolute, Shabago. If we don't get it, Shabago, it is impossible to get the productivity that we require out of Parliament for a good functioning society as it relates to law and order in our country. And it is impossible to get the good required and the efficiency that we require, even from the cabinet level, with cabinet ministers having to be here, there, and everywhere, and not being able to give their full attention to executing at the ministry level. It is impossible to do these things without changing our system from part-time to full-time, without providing them with the necessary staff, without paying them. It's not a matter of just paying them. It's a matter of paying them fairly and adequately for executing such important and sensitive work on behalf of the Bahamian people. Thank you for the opportunity, Shabago.
Don't go. Wait one minute. But let me ask you a question. In respect of senators, right? I didn't get to, but I fully agree that even senators, we might consider making full-time positions with better pay. But here's my caveat. Uh-huh. I really believe the Senate should be filled with more mature people. I mean, literally filled with more mature people. I mean, like people whose ages exceed 40.
Shabago, and to add to just give more strength to what you were saying, because the Senate is so crucial because of the work that they do and being able to have the knowledge, the know-how, and the experience to look at the laws that are being passed in Parliament, and having that knowledge to go at those laws and tell them where they are deficient, or where they are ineffective, or where they can be further strengthened. You need people with experience. You need to have people with understanding. But also, Shabago, which I forgot to add, I believe that they should also be elected people. They should be elected people and not appointed people, Shabago, because of the critical nature of that job and that role.
I got you, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Listen, first of all, let me say, I don't think on this show that we are nearly suggesting that we are comprehensively considering this matter. But I do believe that the Bahamas at 50 can have conversations and perhaps make motions and movements toward the kind of fundamental reforms to itself that might give it a better chance at succeeding, right? Like, here's the thing, right? We've done it a certain way thus far. anyone who suggests we haven't made progress, anyone who suggests that we haven't done well, I think would not be objective. But we also know the extent of our deficiencies. So looking forward for the next 50 years, might we not try something new, different, after thinking through it, not just doing it different for different sake? I don't buy all this let's be innovative, creative kind of wording and all that kind of stuff, because sometimes the same old works, and that's what you should stick with, right? But we can look at things and say, you know what? Maybe there's a different way to do this, and maybe that will help us some more, right? And we could do that. And so it was in that spirit that I proffer this notion that we might look at our members of parliament and look at the parliament and treat the parliament as we treat the executive and the judiciary. I mean, someone texted and said that you think there's the volume of work and heavy lifting that the parliament will have to do compared to what the cabinet ministers have to do? Seriously? I've been both. Both. Are you serious? The cabinet of the Bahamas spends a lot of time developing legislation to go to the parliament. To the parliament for who? For part-time people to take part-time attention to. The laws of the Bahamas reach into your homes, reaches into your churches, reaches into your private life, determines whether you live or die in instances. The laws of your country frame the order of your society. And one day, when people get blatant and bold enough, they may decide to do this law to you, do that law to you. Right now, we can't even get a decision on marital rape in the Bahamas. Marital rape. You think any member of parliament giving full-time consideration to that? Why? Because we in the bedroom of a married woman, the law could have a say. And it has a say today. You say the law doesn't have a say because marital rape is in the law in the Bahamas. Exactly. Exactly. The laws of the Bahamas has shut its mouth on whether or not a woman could be sexually assaulted by her husband. You think the law, the silence of the law is in itself a function? Because when the law is silent, allowing for a breach, allowing for an atrocity, or allowing for a human rights violation or abuse, you make the law speak by passing a law so that each and every soul might know what the limits of their behavior and conduct is. But that's such a light matter. It's better to be a cabinet minister. That's what matters most, being a cabinet minister. You let a cabinet minister try to pass a law, pass something in the Bahamas and don't go to parliament. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Hi, my friend, how are you?
Yeah, I'd like to just engage you for about a minute. Anton said something that is very important, especially with respect to the Senate. During the 98th Constitutional Committee, and which I think Mr. Paul Adley was a part of, that was one of the questions that I put to the committee, and they agreed that senators should be institutional changes to our Constitution to affect that change. Because if someone is elected as a senator, he or she has us more, but be, I feel within myself, but be more accountable to the people as opposed to being, being appointed. That is my, that is no question in my mind.
That is true, and I agree with you. I agree with you that that would be true.
That is one of the things I would like to see happen.
I got you,
and that could happen in short order.
Well, it can't happen in short order. I think that would have to happen by a constitutional referendum.
Yeah, that, no, when I said that, what I meant is that I think that is one of the things that the majority of the Mainland people would agree to. That's mean that you put it to a referendum, it would not take... You see, the problem what I have in the Bahamas is the politician failed to put things to the people that the people would agree on, like capital punishment and all those sort of things. You don't need no long, drawn-out process for that. You put it on a referendum, and I can guarantee you will get that passed within a jiff. That comes from the heart of the people. People want constitutional changes. They want capital punishment in light of what is happening in the Bahamas over the last 15 to 20 years.
Why would you?
The last execution yard was over 20 years ago.
Sorry, I'm asking you a question. Why would you need a constitutional change for capital punishment?
Pardon me?
Why would you need a constitutional change for capital punishment?
You need that because the Privy Council make a ruling, and that is the highest court in the land. And if the people, referendum, the people overturn the Privy Council decision, we want capital punishment. We don't care what you think as the highest court.
Hi. You know I'm allowing you to speak, right? So I'm not rushing you off, right? But the Privy Council never said that capital punishment was unconstitutional. So, and on this show, I like people to be aware of the facts. The Privy Council never said that capital punishment in the Bahamas is unconstitutional. So you can execute and carry out capital punishment in the Bahamas. You just have to do it in line with what the Privy Council said is the law, meaning you can't have people waiting on for inordinate periods of time and all that kind of stuff. But the Privy Council never, and they have a category of things they call the worst of the worst and all that kind of stuff. But the Privy Council never said that capital punishment cannot be carried out in the Bahamas. Okay?
If they didn't say that, then our politicians don't have the political will to ensure that it happens.
Now you may be saying something, but I'm just saying to you, let's not blame the Privy Council for something they did not do. But that's the law. But if you want, but the government went to the parliament and passed laws defining what the worst of the worst is. Didn't have a constitutional adjustment for that to happen. We have a law for that.
Law is still in the books. It's not being enforced. It's being impeded by so many different ways. They use the judiciary as stop the progress that should be made in this country. The judiciary is responsible for a lot of that.
And how do you propose to stop that if the only way you can execute somebody in the country is through the consent of the judiciary? How do you suppose to correct that? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Gulang, your host. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
What risk to inflation, soaring energy prices, and global tensions pose to the Caribbean? Join international experts, local professionals, and policymakers at the 9th annual RF Economic Outlook. Be part of the conversation on March 14th by reserving your seat today at rfbeo.com. RFEO 2023 is proudly sponsored by RF Bank and Trust, Alive Doctors Hospital, Fidelity Bank, J.S. Johnson, PwC, and The Tribune.
Beulah gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Says the Bible states that Jesus was a carpenter's son, right? So that's what it said. He was a carpenter's son. So you know, I've sat in the House of Assembly, obviously, you know, and so sometimes if I speak, I may obviously have a perceived or real bias, right, by some of my comments. But when you first go there, you are in awe of the fact of it, of the long history of it, and the many, many significant personalities who occupied it. For me, it was really something to sit in it at a time when I could actually see sitting in it Celinda and Oscar Pending, who for me and my generation and so many others was just a giant of a figure, giant, not in physical stature, but certainly in the substance of his contribution and presence and leadership in the country, right? So you sit in awe of the place, but then if you are a thoughtful person, you sit there in awe of the work of it, right? In awe of the fact that it is in this place where you will pass laws that will impact upon every single person in the country. And that it is a serious matter that in doing so. And as you participate in that passage, which requires you, because, you know, the laws of our country are drafted in a language not common to souls. So it doesn't matter that you are educated, in quote, and can read fluently. You have to read through a language that is not yours, your ordinary language. And sometimes can exercise your mind to come to their full meaning. In addition to that, because laws are intertwined, so while you are passing one piece of legislation, It has references to other pieces of legislation so that it, without understanding what is relevant in the other pieces of legislation, you can't understand what is relevant in the piece of legislation you are seeking to pass. Right? So sometimes the law will say notwithstanding what exists in the Financial Administration and Audit Act, Section 3, subsection 2, regard being had to the this particular other act and so forth, the law shall be such and such and such. And you have to go and look at that. Sometimes the law that you are dealing with has had several amendments to it, and those amendments aren't reflected necessarily in any single place. You have to go and see the actual amendments to go and put the amendment in the original document, the original law, so that you can make sense of the amendment you're making. So what I learned to do when I was approaching my work in the House of Assembly was to create matrices. What is a matrix? It's a table. I created a table, and what I would do in the table is I put each clause of a piece of legislation. And then I would look for amendments to that clause. And then I would insert in another column an amendment to that clause, so that then I could go and see where the clause had been changed. And then I would look at the current piece of legislation before us, and I would put what the relevant clause to that clause is, and then I would look and see what is the change being made, and I'd make that commentary in what I call a comment column. And that allowed me to be able to debate the passage of the law with the full context of what is being done. When I didn't understand it altogether because of the technical nature of it, I would go and speak to people who could tell me and talk me through it so that I could understand better what, from their technical perspective, was happening. I one of the best examples of that for me was I had to move the arbitration bill in Parliament being introduced for the first time. And it was a piece of legislation. And it had a backdrop, it had a context. And so I had to go and study all of that and make myself knowledgeable about the clauses and what the clauses meant and why they were being applied and so forth. And when I was done, a senior lawyer in the country told me, while we were having lunch, said they were very impressed at my presentation and how complete my knowledge, it seemed, of the thing was. And I could only say that because I had to put the work in. I mean, literally put that work in, because I came to that exercise initially quite uninformed about it, notwithstanding I was the minister, right? Just because you're a minister don't mean you know everything or know plenty of things. You become minister responsible for insurance. Well, you may not have very detailed knowledge of external insurance or domestic insurance. And I came at a time when we were reforming the whole Domestic Insurance Act. You have to put the work in. You're right. You have to put that work in. Now, I could put that work in because I was a cabinet minister and my full-time job was being a cabinet minister. But now you pass that legislation on to a parliamentarian who's part-time and expect them to be able to dedicate and comprehensively look at that thing that way. Yeah, you are asking a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we can wrap up our discussion. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand, everybody, everybody. Come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that if you feel like you make it down the same road.
So much going on in the world today,
Only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you, on the move and on the go, because business should never stop. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit us at any of our branches.
Wednesday, March 8th, 2023 is International Women's Day, a day celebrated globally as a focal point in the women's rights movement, bringing attention to issues such as gender equality, reproductive rights, and violence and abuse against women. Equity isn't just a nice to have, it's a must have. A focus on gender equity needs to be a part of every society's DNA, and it's critical to understand the difference between equity and equality. Guardian Media wants all Bahamians to truly embrace equity. It's not just something we should say, not something to just write about. It's something we need to think about, know, and embrace. It's what we should believe in, unconditionally. This International Women's Day, Guardian Media wants you and your company to embrace equity. Guardian Media wants you to celebrate the women in your organization this International Women's Day by placing them in an ad in our International Women's Day supplement. For more information, call 302-2300, 302-2300, or call your account executive. International Women's Day, Wednesday, March 8th, 2023. Embrace equity.
Get your Carifta tickets. The 50th Carifta Games is coming. April 7th to April 10th. Tickets are on sale now. Online at Carifta50.com or at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium, Western Grand Entrance. For more details, email tickets at Carifta50.com or call 605-4051.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shavar Golang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM for these remaining moments of the show. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I saw something in the newspaper today that I found particularly interesting. So Prime Minister was explaining that he did not This is an article written by Travis Cartwright Carroll, and he says Prime Minister Philip Davis said yesterday, listen to this now, he never shifted his tone regarding his administration's plan to demolish shanty towns and pledged to take a compassionate approach to dealing with what has become a vexing issue for many Bahamians. Now, the article goes on to say, just Thursday, his press secretary, Pitt Watson, said the prime minister shifted his tone from one he used at the closing of a recent GARICOM heads meeting in Nassau to a different tone in a national address 2 days later to suit a new audience, the Bahamian people. So I've noticed a pattern with Prime Minister Davis. This is a pattern. That Prime Minister Davis is unconcerned, it seems. Well, let me not say unconcerned. The Prime Minister seems willing to contradict his folk in public about stuff they are doing on his administration. So let me give an example, right? Minister Miles LaRota, minister responsible for NIB, says NIB's rate is going to increase. Prime Minister don't go to Miles LaRota but see him and say, listen, man, you need to correct that and fix that. This is, because I can tell you all, this is what Ingram would do ordinarily, unless you really tick him off. Ordinarily, this is what he'd do. He'd tell you, he'd say, no, you need to fix that, right? Prime Minister goes on to say, no, there'll be no rate increase. Right? No thing about it. Minister of Public Works say, I don't know nothing about the BPL hedge program, any requests to have anything done. Say that was the Minister of Finance, Prime Minister. I don't know nothing in public, right? National Security Minister says something about the government's view on, was it the marital rape law or something? Prime Minister comes on and say, no, my ministry. This is what we feel. Says something different. Now, then Mr. Watson said that the government didn't receive any interventions from the civil society regarding the marital rape law. Prime Minister said, no, that ain't happened. That we go. Now, the press secretary said, the Prime Minister changed his tone to reflect the audience. Even started, the Prime Minister. Honestly, like for me, it's like that's really honestly, like it's either the case that the Prime Minister is unyielding about his willingness to make sure you understand what his administration is about, and that is his responsibility. Quite frankly, that's his responsibility. To make sure that ultimately, whatever the Davis administration is about, he is accountable for. And so he puts to us what the deal is. The problem this creates is this. It puts you in a situation where whenever a cabinet minister speaks or anyone speaks on behalf of the government, you have to say, wait for it. That's what you have to do. If that becomes a practice, it becomes a situation in which their word becomes less trustworthy as spokespeople for the government. Because then you get to say, okay, but no, wait for it. And that's not a pleasant situation for people to be in. What does that then mean? What that means is people who speak for a government must absolutely be certain, one, that what they have to say is actually what their leadership wants them to say, in particular, the Prime Minister. Because there's no greater contradiction a minister or anyone in the government can have than to be contradicted by a Prime Minister. So it makes sense to check with the Prime Minister. See, when these reporters push that mic in front of your face, that's an invitation. But that's like an invitation sitting around the table of the king. Be careful what you eat and how much you eat, right? You need to say, you know what? I am not here for myself. I represent an administration. And I therefore need to ensure that what I say here will be backed up by the head of that administration. Every minister, every person who speaks on behalf of the government should be prepared to do that. Everyone. Don't listen. There is no place for ego in a world where you serve at the pleasure of someone. Can I say that to you again? There is no place for ego where you serve at the pleasure of others. Jesus made a parable to this end when he said, listen, which one of y'all, if your servant comes in having done this thing to them, oh, thank you very much, etc., or would not rather say, yeah, now go, go, wash up and get my food for me to eat. In other words, next. When you serve at the pleasure of people, you serve at the pleasure of people. It's not about you. It's about them. And so, and even though you're trying nobly to do your job and think you are, it is still possible to get ahead of the game. Now, for the benefit of people who are in that position, like the ministers and others who have done this, and let me say, I've been there. Honestly, I've been there, right? As I said, though, Ingram never came out publicly and would say, oh, X, Y, and Z, Chicago didn't. But when he was displeased or thought that I said something, he said, yo, keep it up. And you knew how to fix it next time. You correct yourself, right? Because the governor general calls on the head of the party with the most members elected to the House of Assembly to form a government. And it is his government. He and the governor general and the queen are the only people who can say my government. Even when your cabinet ministers say my government, they should not be saying that that is not appropriate. It is not their government. Either the queen or the king now, the king, or the governor general, or the prime minister. They're the only three who could say my government. And they're the ones who are ultimately accountable for the government. We have to see more caution in the spokespeople for the Davis administration, because he will absolutely contradict you in public. And he's doing smooth, ain't getting angry. He ain't making no fuss. He just can tell the press, no, I didn't change my tone. No, I still believe that we have to deal with this thing in a humanitarian manner, and so forth and so forth. Boy, let me tell you something. Government is an exciting thing to be in. When you're in it, it costs you a lot of stress, but can't argue and deny. Sometimes it's very exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today. God bless you. I trust you have a great evening. And if he spares life, we'll be back tomorrow. Take care.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody.